This meeting is being recorded. I do not consent.
Too bad.
I actually am drinking a beer today too. I was like,
oh, dude, I was like, should I go grab one? But I don't know. Like,
almost done now though.
The one, remember I was telling you I hated that Modelo? Well, I drank the second one and I felt like crap after. And then literally after that, I didn't want to drink anymore. So I didn't drink all week actually. I only drank yesterday when we were watching the football game and I don't know. It was like, whatever.
I don't know if we talked about this already, Alec, but did you watch the new Suicide Squad yet?
No, not yet, because JC for some reason has like zero interest.
Oh, just really? Don't include me. It's fine.
But I do really want to watch too.
We started watching it last night, but I had work this morning, so I couldn't finish it. But
where are you watching it on?
HBO Max.
HBO Max.
So far, it's pretty funny.
Is it good so far? That's good.
I mean, Chase looked like he was enjoying it because he was laughing a lot. I guess he said like, growing up, watch the shark dude or whatever in the film, he like loved that character growing
is,
up.
So is that what
really
I'm seeing? Like,
watch it.
Is that what and, I'm like, seeing everywhere where the shark bites off that guy's head or something?
Yeah, I think so.
I literally see that
like
everywhere.
A shark like, person or whatever. But yeah, Chase is excited to watch it. So far, it's pretty funny.
I have to watch it. Maybe I'll watch it tonight.
No.
I accidentally wore a Mickey shirt today.
Perfect. Yeah, okay, it's like a 2-hour long movie. And so started watching it pretty late. And then I thought I was going to be able to stay up, but then I could feel myself starting to like get really sleepy. So I was like, okay, we have to like pause it because I'm going to fall asleep now.
Oh, anyways. Crap. Shit. Sorry.
Are we ready? Just
start? I'm just like trying to sign up for these, like, I don't know what to call them, like classes. They call it a virtual event. This one's out now. Storytelling for Success. Exercises.
What is this platform? Is it the.
Called? I don't even know how I found this. Like,
What is it? Skillshare or whatever?
It's called Field Trips. And these are called Creative Mornings because these are all in the morning. Right. And, except this one's actually in the afternoon. Did I sign up for this? Sorry. I'm like thinking to myself. So anyways, I'm just signing up for these things. See if they tell me anything. I was a little disappointed with the podcasting one.
Really?
Not really disappointed. It was mostly just like, I guess it's like, it wasn't really helpful for us because the guy who was leading the whole thing, well, like I said, he hires a sound engineer and it makes sense because he was like, oh, it takes me like 17 hours to create a quality, the same type of quality he can make. And it only takes him an hour. So I'm only paying him for an hour of his time. Mm-hmm. So depending on the rate, that can be it within budget, right? So, and then he's lucky because he has his sister doing this like cute little artwork. So it's like, okay, well, you just got the lucky straw on that. So yeah, tomorrow I'm listening to one about travel. And then the one I just signed up for is the storytelling. So I'll let you know if I learn anything new.
Yes. Okay, well, shall we start it?
Yes.
So Alec can go to bed. No.
Yeah.
Okay.
When's bedtime for you, Alec?
I know. What time do you go to bed, Alec?
Yeah, I know. I always.
I feel like you stay up late or something. I always have that assumption.
Normally like midnight.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I always, for some reason, imagined you just staying up until like, I don't know,
4
like
in the morning.
2:00, 2-3 o'clock in the morning for some reason.
I mean, like, if I like get in, oh my gosh. So I've been watching. Have you guys seen My Unorthodox Life on Netflix?
Oh, no, but I've seen.
I think I've heard of it.
I've been watching that lately and the like I don't know why I'm so fascinated about it. It's about this woman that works for Elite Modeling. She's like the CEO of it now, but she left like Orthodox Judaism and like went way the other direction with it and is like so sex positive and like scantily clad and like all this stuff, and she like eventually took her kids with her. And anyway, but it's just like the way that this family interacts with each other now, I'm just like, okay, I was raised not in a severely oppressive religion. And even I don't talk to my mom that way. Like some of the discussions that this family, I'm like, that is so inappropriate. It's gross. But the episodes are like an hour long and I've just like been obsessively watching it. And so sometimes it's just like, it ends up being like 2 a.m. and I'm just like, why am I watching this show? I gotta go to sleep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't. I think the reason why I didn't watch it because I think I saw something like, oh, we converted to this religion, and then, and one of like the oldest daughter, like, you know, she's like, all of a sudden I converted to it and now I got married and now I follow this religion and now everybody left it or something like that. I don't know. I was like, this is weird. Why is this on my suggested? It's probably because I watch all the other reality shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me intro.
Okay.
Just let me intro, please.
Because we're talking and we're supposed to small talk the intro. Okay.
Oh.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back for another episode with your internet historians. How are you guys doing?
How's your week? You know. Just trying to stay cool in this summer heat, you know. Yeah. I don't know. I love how whenever it's like small talk time, I'm like, I don't know how to talk.
Nothing to say.
Yeah, I'm just excited because I have 2 more days and then I go on my vacation. I'll be gone for like 10 days.
Where are you going? 18.
Where are you going?
Just going back home to visit.
Oh, that's okay. That's right. Yeah. I guess I thought you were just, yeah.
Playing for us, we're going away. Okay, that's vacation.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're going to be gone for like 10 days. And we're taking off work. So, okay, it's a vacation from work. Okay.
Dude, that's the best, honestly. Well, yeah. I did the bad thing. So I took, so at work, I'm at like my PTO cap. So I have to take time off. Otherwise it goes nowhere. And, so I took Friday and Monday off and I did the bad thing where I looked at my emails and I was like, why did you do that? And of course I saw like 2 emails that pissed me off and I'm like,
Yep.
So don't do what I did.
Yeah, I'm like starting to get into a Halloween season with my work. So my messages are like twice what they have been. And it's just like anytime I like glance and I'm just like, no, I'm.
Ooh, do you have any good stories from any of your emails? Like, what's the worst one you've gotten? Or the most annoying one? I don't know.
I don't want to call anybody. not that any of my customers listen to this, I'm sure, but I'll have to think of some for next time. It hasn't been too intense yet.
Well, so. I'll tell you my work. Okay. This is what's really annoying. So it's whenever someone sends it a ticket and they're like, urgent, I need this now because this is happening tomorrow. And we're always like, why did you tell us last minute? That's not really our problem that you decided to tell us
for real. That
it's tomorrow, you know?
Yeah.
And then one of the girls, I literally don't like her, but she's not listening. So she always puts like urgent. And then recently, this is one of the ones that pissed me off where I was like, Lisa, you're off work. Why did you read this? It was like, she basically escalated her ticket by looping in her manager and her manager's like, can somebody help? And then like my colleague was like, I've been trying to email her and she hasn't been responding. And so then he asked one of us, cause he's in the UK and we're in the US, and he asked somebody in the US to like help her out because he can't get a hold of her. And that's like annoying. It's like, oh, it's urgent, bitch.
Yeah, but you can't.
Yeah. Is it really? But the people who say urgent that need it the next day are the ones that piss me off the most.
Damn. Yeah. I mean, I've had a whole bunch of stories from my work, but that could just go on for days and days and days and days. People are just annoying. But anyways.
So. Not you guys, not our listeners, right?
I mean, hey, you never know. Maybe some of them are.
The ones
I feel like we all have our moments though, because I know I've definitely been one of those people as sometimes too. Like when I've gone out in public and then later I'm like, damn, I shouldn't have done that or whatever, you know?
Yeah, that's true. We've all been.
Not that it makes it okay, but it's like we've all been there, you know? We can all relate. But yes, so in today's episode, we will be discussing the history behind the movie Saving Mr. Banks. Spurred on by a promise he made to his daughters, Walt Disney embarks on what would become a 20-year quest to obtain the movie rights to Mary Poppins. The author, P.L. Travers, proves to be an uncompromising curmudgeon who has no intention of letting her beloved characters become mangled in the Hollywood machine. However, when the books stop selling and she finds herself in need of money, Travers reluctantly agrees to consider Disney's proposition. So what are you guys' thoughts on the movie?
So I think this is my third time I've seen the movie. The first time I fell asleep. So the second time I actually watched I feel like I didn't really like it. And then this last time, it wasn't that I didn't like it. It's more like I'm indifferent. I guess I don't love it, but I also don't like it. Did I say that right?
I don't love it, but I also don't like it.
No, I meant like, I do like it. I just don't love it, but I also don't hate it. Yeah, I don't hate it.
I just feel like this movie really made me feel like P.L. Travers is just like an insufferable woman. Like, I was so annoyed with her character the whole time, even though like they had the moments where you're supposed to relate and see that her, like, you know, she's just like a person who's gone through stuff too. But even then I'm just like, bro, like, she's annoying. Like, no. But I mean, I think overall I was entertaining enough movie.
I guess that's why I didn't like it the second time I watched it, because I'm so used to Disney movies being just so like happy and uplifting. And I guess her negative attitude, you know, kind of, I didn't like it at first, but this time around, I guess since I already, and the other thing was, is that when I watched it, I thought that it was like a remake of Mary Poppins. I was so confused. And then, because I didn't really do any research, like when I watched it, I just knew something about Mary Poppins. So that's why I thought Emma Thompson was going to be some sort of version of Mary Poppins. And I was like,
the only thing I wish is that we, like, cause you know, like at the Mary Poppins character is like, I guess kind of based on her aunt or whatever. I feel like they didn't show that enough though. Like her inspiration. Ooh,
I'll get into that later.
I feel like there was like a scene, wasn't there? Or am I like,
no, I'll get into it later.
I was like, was I not paying attention or something? And then I missed all the other scenes. Cause I feel like I only saw one scene of her aunt and like the kind of inspiration for Mary Poppins' character. But then after that, it was just like, okay, let's move on. I just wanted more of like, you know, that.
I agree. Yeah.
I liked it.
Did you like how Tom played Walt?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of interesting because I feel like, well, looking into her more and like just some of the stuff that I have and like how much the Sherman brothers, the composers, disliked her and describe her, because I can't remember which one passed away before the other.
I think Robert.
Robert, one of them, actually, I think when they were making this movie, were they both alive still?
I don't know. One of them's still alive. Richard's still alive. Okay. It's like 95.
Yeah. So when they met with Jason Schwartzman and BJ Novak, and they like had nothing good to say about her, but it was kind of interesting because I felt like the way that Tom Hanks portrayed Walt Disney was kind of aggressive and overbearing. I felt it was kind of interesting because like I honestly felt more for her than I did for Walt. Like I kind of understood where she was coming from more because she holds the characters so, you know, close to her heart. And I wouldn't say that the way that Tom portrayed him was like a villain, but kind of some of the things that he said, they were so like, I was just like, this is a weird, like, I don't know. I didn't feel bad for him. Like I felt mostly bad for her and it didn't really come across like, I don't know. I mean, she was obviously had her whatever and she was just trying to make it take longer. But honestly, I still felt for her. It was kind of an interesting portrayal.
I feel like I get what you're saying. Cause I did not like her like whatsoever really. But I also like, I get what you're saying about his portrayal of Walt Disney, because after watching it, I was like, damn, is Walt Disney like not a good guy, but I mean like, was he kind of like, it has to be my way or no way type of guy or whatever. And so then I was like trying to look at him, like, was Disney like, I don't know. I was trying to see if he was actually as, what is it? I don't know. Cause it was like, he was like harsh or like,
well, to me, it was stern, like, very, but like in a nice business way, like
he would cover it up kind of a thing, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. Should we start talking?
Yes.
Well, since we wanted to change up the format a little bit, I was going to talk about how accurately the movie portrayed her, speaking of the way that the Sherman brothers felt about her. Should I go into her backstory at least a little bit? I don't know if like, I mean, they show it, but then they definitely kind of just more focus on her dad. And it was kind of some of her like young adult life and even just her life that they didn't actually show in the movie is insane. Some of it's insane and I don't know.
Did you watch like the documentary where Because I watched, it was like an hour long documentary, and you could tell it was obviously around the time when this film came out, because Tom was in it and Emma was in it, you know, just talking about her. And then her son was in it talking about her as well. And her son's twin was in it. You guys know about that, right?
That's one thing I want. Yes. That's one thing I wanted to say though, too, is I felt like this movie was Disney's attempt at making it seem like I feel like they were trying to put people against her though, also. Like, I feel like they wanted us to, like, I don't know, I'm like trying to think, how do I don't know, like, I felt like the vibes, like, oh, they're trying to like smear her name almost in a way, like to make her seem like a certain way in the movie. And then like I don't know, like they were definitely trying to like distance her from the Mary Poppins character too, or like trying to make it own, like they're trying to take over the ownership, obviously the ownership of it, because they wanted to make this movie. But it's like, I don't know, I just got like weird vibes from it too, in the sense that,
but I feel know, like even like the worst thing about her they didn't even talk about.
Oh.
Which again is the twins thing.
Yeah. Okay, just get into it. Just get into it.
go.
Yeah. Sorry, it's just like,
Well, we're doing discussion type of, so this is good, right? Like,
yeah. Okay, so I'll try to discuss this as quickly as I can.
One quick fact: she was really pretty as a younger woman.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was like,
what the heck? And then she became a grisly old lady.
Yeah, girl. I was like, okay, but anyway, sorry. Go on now, for real.
So, Helen Lyndon Goff, also known as Lyndon, so her family called her Lyndon. They didn't call her Helen or Pamela.
There was a nickname. I think wasn't they said it in the movie? Ginty. Yes.
I didn't really see anything about that. So, I mean, I'm assuming it's true, because I don't know where else they would have gotten that. That's a really specific, yeah. But like everything that I was reading, they're just like, they called her Lyndon. So,
yeah. And I know what you mean. Cause even for me, same thing with researching, it's like, I would read one thing, but then I watched that documentary and then they said, that's what they said. The other thing, which is the nickname that I just said, what was it?
Ginty.
Ginty. There you go.
Ginty, which honestly sounds like a slur or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
like gimpy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway. So she was born on August 9th, 1899, which is just like insane to think about someone that old, in Maryborough, Queensland, Australia, at her family's home. Her mother, Margaret Agnes Goff, was Australian and the niece of Boyd Dunlop Moorhead, who was the premier of Queensland, which I guess is just like the head of the government.
I was going to say who?
So she's well off, her mom is. So she kind of married beneath her to her father. So the way that they portray her in the movie, which you kind of see that, like she seemed very used to the way that they were living, and she seemed very upset when they moved to the outback.
In the beginning, when they left and she had to leave the nannies, right? Like she was like, I don't want to leave. I know.
Hey, she wanted to marry him. So.
Yeah.
I thought she got knocked up.
Oh.
No.
I'll get there.
Oh, my bad.
I mean, I wouldn't say she was knocked up. I mean, they just say that Pamela or PL or what do we want to call her? Pam?
Mrs. Travers.
Yeah, she goes by Mrs. Travers. Not Mrs., not Travers. Mrs. Travers.
Yeah.
Yeah, they said that she was born 9 months, you know, after they got married. So who knows? But yeah, her dad, Travers Robert Goff, was unsuccessful as a bank manager owing to his alcoholism, which we see, and was eventually demoted to the position of bank clerk. Although Mrs. Travers was born in Australia, she considered herself Irish and later expressed the sentiment that her birth had been misplaced. What? So it's kind of, yeah, so everything that I was reading, I mean, because I'm assuming because of her upbringing not being the best, she kind of had a habit of like making stuff up and just like pretending it either didn't happen or would like say something so much that that's just the way that it happened, even though that isn't true. I might mention it later. I can't remember, but like
I saw that. So her dad is Irish, isn't he? Mm-hmm. But then I saw that in the documentary, they said that he never even been to Ireland either.
I don't know.
One of those mysteries.
I mean, I guess you can be Irish and have never been if you're like Irish by blood, I guess. I mean,
like,
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. My one of the girls in sorority, both her parents are from, I think, England, and she reps England like hard.
Was she not like, in?
No, she's been, but I mean, like, she's never like lived there. Like, she's just like, she got married there, I believe. And her parents actually recently moved back over there, but they've lived here for like basically her whole life. And so she, I think she really considered herself to also be from like that area. You know, I'm sure like they grew up with a lot of that culture and whatnot too in their household. But I don't know.
Interesting. So as I mentioned, the family lived in a large home with servants in Maryborough until Lyndon was 3 years old when they relocated to, is it pronounced Brisbane? Like, even though it's spelled Brisbane,
I think so, Brisbane? In
1902, Gough recalled an idealized version of her childhood in Maryborough as an adult. In Brisbane, Gough's sister was born. In mid-1905, Gough went to spend time with Ellie in Sydney, so Ellie's the aunt. Later that year, Lyndon returned, and the family moved to Elora, Queensland, which is what they are, where they're moving at the beginning of the movie, which said it was a 16-hour train ride. No, thank you. Did you see that? That sounds awful. I love trains, but not for 16 hours. I don't really... So this was in part because Gough was often left alone as a child by parents who were, quote, caught up in their own importance. She developed a form of self-sufficiency and had an idiosyncratic form of fantasy life, according to her biographer, Valerie Lawson, often pretending to be a mother hen at times for hours. Which
that I thought was crazy. Like, she literally would go and sit in like a made, like a little nest that she made, right? For hours.
Yeah, so kind
of. I mean, if you could sit like, on a 16-hour train ride, I guess.
Yeah, then why not pretend to be a chicken? Yeah, so it's kind of like what I was saying. It's just like she kind of always had a habit of just like making stuff up. So I guess that makes you a good author. I don't know. she wrote poetry, which her family paid little attention to. In 1906, she attended the Elora Public School, and her father died in 1907. Mrs. Travers was I think around seven years old when her father passed away. So following his death, her and her mother and sisters moved to Bowral, New South Wales in 1907. Wow, I cannot read today. She boarded at the now defunct Normanhurst School in Ashfield, a suburb of Sydney, from 1912. And this is where she began her love of theater, which I thought was interesting and kind of why I wanted to talk about more about her young adult life, because of the way that they portray her in the movie. I'm just like, theater? This girl likes to act? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and apparently most, she like...
Isn't most like... Well, I guess when I think of theater, I think of like Broadway, and there's music in that. And she was all like... Mm-hmm. Not cool about music.
Shakespearean plays and stuff.
I guess you're right. Those
are pretty popular for people to be in.
Yeah. I mean, she played a pretty successful role in a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream and went on to join a Shakespearean company. And she really wanted to just be a professional actress, I guess. So when she had her first role in a troupe as Anne Page in March of 1921, she decided to go by the stage name of Pamela Lyndon Travers, taking Travers from her father's name and Pamela because she thought it a pretty name that flowed with Travers. So
that's yeah, I heard Pamela was PL. A popular name at the time.
Yeah, it was a popular name at the time. In 1924, she left Australia for England, settling in London. She only revisited Australia once in the 1960s. For 4 years, she wrote poetry for the Irish Statesman, beginning while in Ireland in 1925 when Travers met the poet George William Russell, who, as an editor of the Statesman, accepted some of her poems for publication. So... This is where, like, so it was rumored, but then in some things that I was reading, it wasn't rumored. She was openly bisexual, which I thought was quite interesting. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they did not portray that in the movie.
Yeah.
Dude, but yeah, like I said, it's like so confusing because I, same thing when I was kind of looking into it, you know, because she lived with a lady, right, for a while.
Yeah, Madge Bernand.
But then, like... Well, in that, again, I'm going to refer to this documentary. It was like, oh no, she only liked men. And I was like, okay.
I mean, I feel like that's how it always is with everything you like look into. Some people are like, yes, they were bisexual or they were gay or lesbian, whatever. And then other things are like, no, that's just, they were just really good friends or, you know.
You know what? I was listening to Hamilton today while I was cleaning, and I hella thought about the same thing, like with the guy, and where they were like, oh, it's love notes. And then other people are like, no, no, that's just how they speak in the, at the, during that time. Yeah. So, yeah.
So she had interesting relationships in her life, and she, I believe it was this George William Russell guy, but I didn't write the name down, but she had a affair, I guess, with a man that was 10 years her senior who was married. And then, yeah, she met this Madge woman and they moved in together in 1931. They moved from their flat in London to a thatched cottage in Sussex. So
I guess you don't move into a cottage with just anybody, right?
I know. It's like, yeah, it's a love cottage. There in the winter of 1933, she began to write Mary Poppins. Mary Poppins was published in 1934 to great success. And as early as 1926, this is when she started publishing short stories, Mary Poppins and the Matchman, which introduced the nanny character of Mary Poppins and Bert, the street artist. In 1934, Mary Poppins, it was a literary success, and 7 sequels followed, the last in 1988 when Travers was 89. I did not realize that there were that many Mary Poppins books.
Yes, that's one thing I wrote down that I wanted to talk about. I was like, dude, there's like, I think 8 books, right?
Yeah.
You said 7.
Yeah, I was
okay.
Say,
so 8 total. Okay, I was like, "What the hell?" Well, first of all, I didn't even know Mary Poppins was a book. So
really,
and then that's to find out there is 8, I was like, "Oh, what the hell?"
Yeah, I didn't realize there were that many as well. It's a lot. But then I heard that she just wanted to keep writing. That's why she didn't just like write focus on Mary Poppins books. She wrote like other stuff too because she wanted to just prove herself as a writer, I guess. Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, she wrote a lot. She wrote poetry. She had her own column in a couple newspapers. And yeah, I was like amazed that she like had her own column where basically she wrote whatever she wanted, which according to her biographer was like really kind of scandalous stuff. And I was just like, whoa. Yeah.
Yeah, totally different from how she's portrayed in the film.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then I had this, which I thought was interesting because they kind of made it seem like in the movie, like, she had, I don't know if I would say never been to America before, but like she seemed very like unfamiliar, I guess. But apparently she moved to the US in 1940 and lived there for 5 years.
Oh wow.
Yeah, she was publishing another book, I Go by Sea, I Go by Land, in 1941. So I don't know. I thought that was interesting. And then she moved back to England at the end of the war, where she continued writing. And then she returned to the U.S. in 1965 and became a writer in residence at Radcliffe College from 1965 to 1966, and at Smith College in 1966. And then she was like lecturing and publishing various works. But I was just like, oh, she's like back and forth all the time. She's like traveling.
Yeah. Mrs. Travers is a traveler.
Pretty much.
Yeah. When were we going to talk about her son? Well, the only reason why I wanted to bring that up because
it sounded like you had the info, so I was going to let you do what wanted to do.
Well, the only reason why I wanted to bring it up was because I think there was a scene, I think it was between her and Walt, and he was like, do you have any kids? And she's like, what? She kind of, the way they had Emma answer was like, kind of, I forgot exactly what it was, but it wasn't like no, and it wasn't yes. It was like in between. And it's true because she adopted a son, basically. You know, she basically adopted one twin, and it's very strange, right? Like, why? Mm-hmm. And I guess when she went over to the family that was placing their child up for adoption, she went to like some sort of psychic who was like, yeah, trying to figure out which son to take over the other one. And then the psychic is the one who like said, choose this one, which is the one that she, the older one, there you go. And so she chose the older one and raised him. And then, one day the other twin came knocking on the door, like, let me see my brother. And then she had to, and then I guess she never told him that he was adopted and anything like that. And he said that one time he saw on his passport the name Horn, which is his birth name or his birth last name. And then he was like, what's that? And she's like, oh, that's your dad's name. And he died, blah, blah, blah.
So, I was gonna say, I was like, didn't she like, how she raised him was like not very good in general. Like, I think she was trying to like groom him to be like a smart guy or whatever, but like she didn't have the patience, I think, also to deal with the kid. Like, she got frustrated with him a lot.
In the documentary, when he was talking about her, he actually like started to get like teary-eyed about it. He kind of said that he sees a lot of Mary Poppins in his, the way his mom raised him. I mean I'll get to that when I talk about Mary Poppins, but just basically being a little more stern and strict. Is he still alive?
Because didn't one of them commit suicide?
I don't know. I actually didn't look up that.
I think the one that, so not her, the one, I don't know their names. I think the other one that she didn't take ended up committing suicide because once they like kind of discovered that they are twins,
yeah, and they both saw, had like, alcohol problems and one of them went to prison and I think
that's so Anthony, awkward, because in the documentary, like, you see them go get a beer together.
Like, yeah, they're like, I guess they are both alcoholics, and like, I think just like, I mean, from what I read, it seemed like they were both, even though they weren't together, are both kind of suffering from the same things, like depression and like, you know, obviously alcoholism. And I am pretty sure that I saw that one of them, like, he killed himself. Like, I think so.
I think the one that didn't get adopted did, because I think he was telling his wife or whatever that he felt like his brother had it so much better than him.
Yeah.
Type of a thing. And then the other brother was upset because he never knew his family and felt like he missed out and like wanted to know his actual biological family, and so he had issues too. And
she kind of created a mess
I'm surprised that you said that he was upset, because from everything I saw, it made it seem like she just wasn't really fit to be a mother, or that she didn't really have it in her to, like, she didn't really have like, not even like loving, but I feel like she didn't have like a nurturing like side to her. Like,
no,
I think,
not at all. She also tried to like adopt her maid or something.
That's right. Yeah, I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, what her deal is, I don't know.
Well, because she just wanted to be a mom. But, yeah, she just wanted to be a mom, and she was like, she thought like the maid would be a perfect daughter for her, I guess. And then the maid was like, okay, no.
Well, she was older, right?
Yeah, she was older. But I was gonna say that probably the reason why her son got a little emotional was just because she was already gone for so long and he was drinking. And I'm sure that just kind of, even if you don't have a good relationship with your parent, I'm sure you just miss them when they're gone. Just a little stuff.
Or he's crying from all the torment his life was.
Well, he was saying good stuff, so he didn't say like, yeah.
He's like, this is making a really bad memory.
All right. So I had a couple snippets from like Variety and Slate and different news outlets. But Kelly Marcel, who shares screenwriting credit with Sue Smith, has said in interviews that she drew on a wide range of sources, including Mary Poppins. She wrote The Life of P.L. Travers by Valerie Lawson, who I mentioned earlier, in Disney's archives, using Lawson's book and published interviews with Marcel. An interview request placed through Disney was ignored. The interviewer sorted through what was fact and fiction on what they actually portrayed. So, as I mentioned earlier, yes, Mrs. Travers was as difficult as she was in the movie. The Sherman brothers did not like her. She tried to protect her creation from being corrupted by the influence of Walt Disney and pop culture in general. Lawson, the biographer, explains that Mary Poppins' character in Travers' book was tart and sharp, rude, plain, and vain. She demonstrates characteristics that are more similar to P.L. Travers than to Julie Andrews. So, I mean, I feel like she makes a couple comments in the movie how she's just like, that's not really how she acts. And like throughout the whole process, she felt that Julie Andrews was too pretty compared to the plain, short, and thin lady that she wrote about. And I think she mostly talked about Dick Van Dyke and how much she didn't like Dick Van Dyke in being.
Why didn't she? I never got why she didn't like him.
I don't know. You know, a lot of British people, they always talk crap about him.
Yeah, his accent in that movie is really bad.
Like literally every time, because you know half my team is in the UK, so anytime something gets brought about American playing somebody British, they're always like, as long as it's not like Dick Van Dyke. And then even one time I tried to do a little bit of a British accent, they're like, okay, Dick. Then they called me Dick Van Dyke, and I was like, okay, I'll just
okay.
Jeez. I'll just turn my video off and cry now. Don't worry about me.
She Travers objected to the animated horse and pig, the song Let's Go Fly a Kite, the notion that Mary Poppins would have a romance with a mere chimney sweep, turning Mrs. Banks into a suffragette, which they showed. And this was an interesting one that I thought was kind of interesting that they included naming Mrs. Banks Cynthia instead of Winifred, which was a really interesting argument. The grandness of the Banks house, certain American words and phrases that they had written into the script, and like I said, the casting of Dick Van Dyke and Julie Andrews. So those are some of the issues, which I feel like they showed most of them. I thought it was kind of interesting though that she didn't like Let's Go Fly a Kite, and yet that was the one that supposedly won her over. But I guess according to the Sherman Brothers, it was actually the
Feed the Birds or something like that.
Feed the Birds. Yeah, Feed the Birds that actually won her over.
Oh my God, I forgot to say this. I have not even watched Mary Poppins before. Sorry.
The first one?
Ever in your life?
Mm-mm.
Not even the
second one? It's a long movie. I tried rewatching it right now and I was fast forwarding a lot.
Yeah, it is long. I haven't seen it in a really long time.
Anyways, go on.
The music, I will say, you know, I just didn't realize how good the Sherman Brothers were until I literally just thought about it after this, before watching Mary Poppins again. It was like, if I think about anything Mary Poppins, I think about just the music. So that
they wrote a lot of the classics, those Sherman Brothers.
Good old Sherman Brothers.
Speaking of, Richard Sherman said she hated everything. Like in the movie, the real P.L. Travers insisted that they not make up words, including having the chimney sweep Bert rhyming responsible with constable. I mean, and they don't say whether or not it was, you know, directly related to, I think it was her father that like made up words. And so she's like, everything had to relate to something that her father did. They didn't say that at all, but I thought it was pretty silly because I don't even remember. Does that even make it? I was gonna say, does that even make it in the movie? But
yeah, it does.
No one would know.
Okay. What, the responsible?
Yeah,
yeah, it did.
I was about to ask, but I'm like, you haven't seen it, Nicole, and you were fast forwarding Lisa.
Oh no, in the actual movie, right?
Yeah,
yeah, I mean,
I just, because I started watching the movie today, and I literally got to the point of supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, and then I haven't. That's where I stopped. So in the beginning, remember in the beginning, they were doing the act and then they started singing that song. So yeah, that is what happened. And then I heard him say the response. Mm-hmm. I can't even say the word because it's
like responsible.
Responsible. So yeah, I was like, oh, okay. That did make it in.
But there is that when she actually makes her way to the premiere, which was true. Mm-hmm. Disney did not actually invite her, but she did show up. The one part that I really felt like I was like feeling for her was when she was watching Mr. Banks walk away. She was like crying. So apparently that's only like half true, I guess, the way that they portrayed it, because she was actually crying out of like anger and disapproval that the animated scenes actually made it into the movie. And I guess she asked Disney after the premiere to change it, and he said that ship has sailed, Pam. Like that's we're done. I guess they went back and forth because after like they had done all this, she's like, okay, so when do we start cutting the movie? And Walt had to be like, girl, no, you have script writing, you know, you have nothing over editing, like no. So I guess they really got into it, but
I was gonna say, that's one thing too, that one of the articles I was reading was kind of about how they, like how you're kind of saying, like you feel like bad for her in a way, which I mean, after reading this article, I kind of understand just the way that they kind of took her most thing that was like the closest to her heart and then changed it into something else. And then they're like, you have to be okay with this kind of a thing. And it's like, I can understand. Yeah. Like how that's traumatizing in its own way. And yeah, I just thought the article was interesting because it was very like saying, I don't want to say like anti-feminist, but it, like, it was just like saying like, it was just like, it brought feminism into it in a sense. And just that like how like, or I guess just women dealing with men in general and how like they take our ideas or whatever, and then change them and say that, oh, you know,
like, it's like, it's like in class when somebody or the teacher asks a question and you like say the answer. And then some, this boy raises his hand and then he says the answer and she's like, yeah, good job. And you're like, motherfucker, like, oh, this is the answer. You know, you only got it because of me. So I guess that's how I see it.
Yeah.
I was going to say, she didn't just show up. She was also invited to the premiere by like an executive or board member or something, like kind of sort like of. It was like, she did kind of show up, but she also was invited by somebody, but it wasn't Disney. It was like,
So she pretty much like, so she didn't walk into his office like they show in the movie. I guess like she had called over to like some executives or something and being like, I'm gonna be there. And so they like rushed her an invite and are just like, okay, guess we're gonna guess this is happening now. But she goes on to say in a letter to her lawyer, she described her horror over what she had seen at the premiere, saying, quote, as chalk is to cheese, so is the film to the book. Tears ran down my cheeks because it was all so distorted. I was so shocked. I felt that I would never write, let alone smile again.
She's definitely a little dramatic, though.
Yeah. But I guess in a rare 1977 interview, she commented on the legacy of the film, saying, I've seen it once or twice and I've learned to live with it. It's glamorous and it's a good film on its own level, but I don't think it is very like my books. So yeah,
that's the best compliment she can give. Huh?
Yeah, well, not only that, but I feel like a lot of books aren't like their film counterparts. So I mean, I don't know.
But I guess maybe it's just the time or something where, because I feel like nowadays you see that and you're like, okay, yeah, I expected that. But I wonder if during that time you see a lot of movies get made out of books and you see the huge difference. I wouldn't know. It's like 64, right?
Yeah, I have no idea. So was the relationship between Mrs. Travers and Walt Disney accurate? So I'm not sure you could even say that they even had a relationship.
Yeah. I mean,
in the film, I feel like they made us believe that Travers was coming to LA to further discuss the possibility of giving Disney the rights to her story. But in reality, before she even came to LA, Disney already had these rights. But the film, you know, obviously we already talked about that. She did get input on the script and kind of, I guess, had the final say on what the song, like, yes, the song can mean it, no, it can't be. The main reason she didn't want Disney to own Mary Poppins was because of the way Disney's brand would like cartoonize or, you know, make everything cheerful. And as you already said, that's not really who Mary Poppins was. I feel like, because what I read, it was like not a type of book that, yeah, they had like adventures and stuff like that, but it didn't also shy away from like the realities of what life is and like the sadness that does come with life at times.
Because it's kind of like that spoonful of sugar part or whatever, where she's just like, you can't just do that and not talk about the harsh realities of childhood and all that stuff. Was like, dang girl, okay. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's true. It's like, I feel like I think that's kind of why, yeah, like you said, she was like upset about it because like the realness of her characters kind of went away when it was depicted by Disney's, I guess, characters that he created. So when Travers got to LA, after one day of working with her, Disney left for his Palm Springs home and didn't deal with her much because of her tendencies to be on the more difficult side. So it was pretty much the Sherman brothers who had to get the brunt of all that and deal with her and worked with her, which is probably why they don't have very nice things to say about her after all this time. Mm-hmm. So they didn't really have much of an interaction. The few interactions they had in the film are pretty much completely false as well. It's not necessarily that they didn't have him, but they are obviously not... they're not portrayed.
No one knows what they actually said or anything.
But he just wasn't there. Like, she wasn't able to just walk into his office whenever she wanted to.
Oh no. Like, yeah, he wasn't. Yeah, he was like never around. He just left her and the Sherman Brothers just dealt with her the whole time.
And he didn't have to kiss her ass because, like, he wants her to sign the movie rights over, right? Because he already got the rights. So it wasn't like she had that, like, hanging over his head, like how they showed it in the movie.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's a really interesting difference. Like, that's, like, the whole plot of the movie. And they're just no, he had the rights the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of interesting the way that pretty much the whole movie he's trying to win the rights, and it's like that's not even
me it kind of almost seems like it was a contractual thing, right? So her stipulation in signing those rights over was like, okay, well, I have final say final say of like what happens in the script, right? And so because of that was like, I don't know, stipulated in their contract, I'm assuming that's why she went over there, and he's just basically fulfilling his portion of the agreement in order to like still have that contract be intact, kind of a thing.
I think there's some images of like her script or a script, and she has like words crossed out and she's like, no.
I believe like, that.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, that's a hard thing too. Cause like in the film and even just like reading about her, it's like, I go back and forth on how I feel about her. It's like, yeah, I understand that she had shit go down in her life in Ireland, but I was like, I also feel like that's just not an excuse for her to be an insufferable little twat as well. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I don't know. Like to me, like, especially, I don't know, I just relate it back to like dealing with people in general. It's like, yeah, you might've gone through some shit, but that doesn't mean you get to treat me like shit. Like what the hell, you know? But anyways,
I feel like it was her like defense mechanism because I think she just didn't want Disney and everybody to take advantage of her and her character. So she felt like she had to like come in with her like armor ready to go.
Definitely. Disney did take Travers on a tour of Disneyland, but she hated it and she never rode a carousel. So yeah, like we said, like the main, like, I guess, plot point, not even plot point, but like the turning point, I guess you can say, in the film is like, you know, when Disney flew to England to kind of have that one-on-one with her, the heart to heart, and be like, hey, like, we come from the same background, you know, he's like, had a rough childhood.
Hello, Helen.
You've had a rough childhood. Yes. And kind of he kind of met eye to eye on her and something in their lives. Yeah. So that didn't happen. like I said, he already like got the movie rights to the, to the book.
He had been to her house before though. Right. Like, but just not like how they showed in the movie.
No.
He
never had a heart to heart with her about that. Right. And he never talked about like their childhoods or anything like that. And I guess apparently he never even knew anything about her childhood. Like he did not know that she came from the background that she came from, or that her father was an alcoholic, or you know, that she had a rough growing up at all. And apparently he didn't even think that his own childhood was that bad, or like at least what he spoke about, like the delivering newspapers thing, I guess he didn't really see that as being something that was like to hold on to as in his adult life. He just saw it as something that was like a hardworking job for him to do when he was younger. And then, yeah, like Alex said, he didn't invite her to the premiere of the movie because, yeah, she's just a little butthead.
You know what they said in the documentary is that, you know, like I said, it's like all over the place, right? Because I read what you said as well, Alec, where she went up to Disney and was like, so can we take the penguins out or something? And he was like, oh, honey, that ship has sailed. But then I also, in the documentary, they were saying how when she wrote a letter to Walt, or she said something to Walt saying like, oh, the movie's amazing. And then like after that, she was like talking mad shit. So it was like, they were kind of like, what the hell? Because I guess what she said to Walt was like, oh, it's amazing, like all good stuff. And then later she was like, I hated it.
I don't know. I didn't see that. But all I know is that she didn't care for it.
Opinions.
Yeah. But the thing is, they didn't really interact at all. Like I feel like in the film, they didn't really interact that much either, but in reality, it was even more distant. No interaction at all. Like I think he just got fed up.
Less.
Yeah. And like you said, cause you know, obviously I guess Walt was very about his business, but he also thought people should kind of see things from like, I guess the positive or be more positive about things. And I think because she was not that way, he just couldn't deal with it. So he just decided to leave and not deal with her at all. And then just, like I said, have the Sherman Brothers deal with her. And then that's just pretty much it. That was like all their interactions they really had.
I just had a moment. Cause I was like, what if he was just like hella sick too? Because wasn't he like, that was like a year or two before he died. Right.
Well, yeah, that's kind of what they were in. Time he would like enter a room and was coughing.
Oh yeah, that's true. Wow.
And then
why did I not pick up on that?
Yeah, he's like, yeah. So like that you can like, always hear him in the other room coughing and stuff. And then there is one scene where she kind of busts into his office and he's like, oh, I don't want anybody to see me smoking, whatever. But yeah, he he died 2 years after the movie
premiered. Oh, what the hell? I did not even pick up on that whatsoever.
Oh, well, I knew the coughing thing because I remember seeing that because Tom was like, oh, I point with two fingers because he used to always have a cigarette in his hand. I remember saying that stuff. But, oh, and don't they do that in Disneyland as well? They don't point with one finger.
Yeah, you never point with one finger. It's always two as a gesture. But I mean, I want to say that that's like a half truth because they would say that, oh yeah, there's so many pictures of him and stuff where he's pointing with a cigarette and they like edited out the cigarette because he never wanted people to see him smoking, whatever. So it's like a half truth. And then also people say, oh, well, you just as in like hospitality, you gesture with two fingers because one can be seen as, you know, inappropriate or whatever for people from other cultures. So,
well, who knows? Yeah. I was just saying like, maybe that's why Disney didn't want to be around her so much because, you know, he was like sick. I don't know if you knew he was sick at that time though, but
He died like right across the street there's a hospital across the street from the studios and that's where he died, which was like yikes.
I'm like, from you?
No. I'm like, from where? From the studio in Burbank. You can see the hospital from the studios. It's kind of morbid, honestly.
In Burbank? I'm trying to remember if I remember driving by that. No, I don't remember.
But yeah, that's pretty much all I have on their relationship is that they didn't have a relationship. But, you know, next we're going to be learning about the differences between the book Mary Poppins and the movie Mary Poppins, which we will get right into after this short ad break. So Lisa, what are these differences, man? I gotta know them because, you know, I haven't read that book and I haven't seen that movie actually. So like, tell me what
it's real. Yeah, please break it down for Nicole.
Okay, so I actually was like, oh, I'll read the book, but then I couldn't find the book. And then the only one I could find was like the audio version. And I was like, okay, I'm not gonna be able to listen to that in time. So I found this article from bookriot.com who did read the book. And I just took out some paragraphs that he said, and he said, while they are similar by nature, they are completely different personalities. Julie Andrews' Mary Poppins is never cross, but the Mary Poppins in the book is not only usually cross, but reads as bitter, unloving, and grumpy. She also comes across as playing with the children's minds, manipulating and belittling them while claiming that their magical adventures never happened. So
she was gaslighting them?
Yeah, yeah, she was. But did you watch the one with Emily Blunt?
No.
Okay.
Yes, so, of course I did.
That one I actually have
Miranda's in it.
Well, especially after like all this, you know, I'm like, okay, actually maybe I will watch the one with Emily Blunt. I probably won't watch the older one, but like I'll watch the new one.
So the one with Emily Blunt, she kind of is a mix between those two because there is a couple. I remember this because I was like, this is weird, but she does do that sometimes where the kids will be like, don't you remember when we did this? And she's like, no, why would I do that? You know? Mm-hmm. And so I guess that's what's similar to the book Mary Poppins. More onto it. So although the character retains her unlikable qualities and Mary Poppins opens the door and Mary Poppins in the park, I began to understand and appreciate that Mary Poppins in the books compared to the film. It's important to understand that Disney's version of Mary Poppins is an extremely Americanized version of an otherwise British tale, which I appreciate the changes Disney made to make her seem less harsh. As I kept reading, I came to understand more and more, given the generational values from the time period, which is 1930s London, it makes sense that Mary Poppins is somewhat cruel and unloving. Childhood is not something that is always taken seriously. Despite her unloving qualities, Mary Poppins offers the children the tools to solve their own problems with a bit of magic. Just beneath the surface, her vulnerability was always there. No one can maintain the frigid, icy exterior forever. Mary Poppins came for a reason, to look after the Banks children. And just as Julie Andrews says in the film, practically perfect people never permit sentiment to muddle in their thinking. She just puts her job first before her emotions, which makes her more real than I had ever considered. She just did what she had to do. She loved them enough to let them believe she was cruel.
So it was tough love, basically.
Yeah. So okay. So what I mostly understand between the two is that, first of all, movie version is what we see, like American British nanny. And then the book version is like maybe more realistic to a British nanny. Maybe British nannies are a little bit more harsh. And yeah, so that's what I kind of went back to. The son is what he was trying to say is that, you know, maybe his mom was trying to be like Mary Poppins and do that tough love type of thing with him. And that's why she may have seemed cruel or, you know, strict. But really he knew that she loved him at the end of the day. And that's the same Mary Poppins. Like, I guess the kids always knew that she loved them, but yeah, she just didn't show it.
I feel like, you know, Julie Andrews, she plays this Mary Poppins character. I've never seen The Sound of Music, but does she not also play like a nanny who comes in and takes care of kids? Oh,
she's so actually called a governess. Oh, okay. Not a nanny, she's a governess. Okay, my bad. You know what? I forgot how beautiful Julie Andrews' voice is. Like when I was listening, when she was singing, I was like, oh my God, Julie. Good.
I think the difference between a governess and a nanny, though, is a governess also teaches them. Whereas a nanny just cares for them, but a governess is also like a teacher.
That makes sense.
All I remember from Sound of Music is like her saying this song, like "Do a deer," and then I remember at school they'd be like "Do re mi," and I was like, I know this. So something else I wanted to bring up is like where the Mary Poppins character came from, because again, I have like three different places where they say she comes from. So one of them is her aunt or great, I don't know, but her aunt, right? Who maybe she came to save the day, like they show in the movie when the parents are kind of.
Her name was also Helen, by the way.
Oh yeah, because wasn't she named after her?
I don't know, but I just thought it was weird that both their names were Helen, but they called her Ellie or whatever. But I was like, Helen, what? Why would they? I don't know.
She had like 50 names, okay?
Yeah.
So. Yeah, so one of them was the aunt. So, and they said that, oh, she said like spit spot, like Mary Poppins does. And then the other one was she had Irish nannies when she was growing up who also said spit spot and had the umbrella with the parrot at the end of it. And they were saying, oh, okay, so that's where they got Mary Poppins from. And then the third, which they said that Mrs. Travers like wrote an article in like some American magazine that she knew no one would read. And she revealed where the idea came from. And apparently one night when it was like pouring rain, I think her father had already passed away or maybe was very sick at this time. And her mother left to go commit suicide, as we saw in the movie, except she didn't chase after her mom. Like she was taking care of her younger siblings and her mom left. And as they were next to the fire because it was like pouring rain, she like began to distract them by telling them this story about this white horse. And she discovered at that time that just during a very dark time, she is able to just naturally storytell and come up with a story. So that's where she discovered her ability of storytelling. And so she was trying to say that same thing with Mary Poppins. And then same thing when Alec was saying she was in a cottage, right? Cottage when she wrote Mary Poppins. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With her lover.
Yeah. But apparently at that time she was very ill. And so, yeah, so when she was very ill, she like her mentor was saying like, write it out, girl. And, you know, while she was ill, she was able to create Mary Poppins. So I guess it can be a mix of everything, right? She probably had the spit spot from the aunt, the umbrella from the nanny, and just the natural ability to storytell.
I just realized, I'm wondering if, because you know how her dad, Colin Farrell, how he is very kind of like makes up stories for everything. I'm wondering if that was the people, wow, I'm like blanking, the screenwriter's way of being like, this is where she got her like innate ability to like come up with stories and stuff like that. And they're like trying to relate it back to the dad, because I mean the whole thing with the hen, that's when like the dad kind of goes off the handle a little bit and yells at the mom and stuff, like this is important type of a thing. So I just like put two and two together. I'm like, oh, maybe they're like trying to say that she got it from her dad.
They were, yeah, because
she kind of was like,
yeah, because you know, she definitely was like a daddy's girl, and that's what they would do together, was like make up stories together and stuff. So I think he helped encourage that ability, but I think for her, she realized how good that ability was when her mom left to commit suicide. She didn't do it, but you know, she, but I guess,
never the same.
Yeah, so So yeah, she just discovered, like, she was able to also capture her siblings' attention too. You know, they were able to kind of go on this journey together with her storytelling. I mean, that's true. It's like, if you're putting that, put in that pressure situation, like, how many of us can come up with a story which we would all listen to when all of a sudden it's like, oh, hey, mom's back. Anyway, I guess that was a lot shorter than I expected, but there was really... it's just really simple and plain about the difference between Mary Poppins and the book and the movie. I was just really curious about that because she was so, like, protective over the book version of Mary Poppins.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was I saying? So you've seen both of them, Alec, the original Mary Poppins movie and this. So what are the differences between the two movies?
I mean, the second movie.
If you can remember.
I mean, the second movie is technically a continuation of the first. Mm. It's not a reboot or anything. So Emily Blunt is supposed to be Julie Andrews. And then
25 years later.
Yeah, but the kids are older. They're adults.
Oh, so she's going back to the same kids.
Yes.
To help their kids.
Yeah.
Interesting, interesting.
Yeah, because I think they're, like, the bank is involved again.
Yes.
And yeah.
Another Colin is involved, right? Not Colin Farrell, Colin Firth, isn't it?
Oh yeah. 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 It is Colin Firth. Yeah. 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 Because, oh my gosh, what's the kid's name? Michael. Michael's an adult and, like, they owe money and, like, all this stuff. And
dude, yeah. I went to go see what those kids are chimney sweep. The little kid who played Michael. Yeah.
He died. But the woman who played, what's her name? Jane.
Yeah.
Jane makes a cameo in the movie, in the second movie, which is cool. Yeah. Dick Van Dyke also makes a cameo.
Okay, in the movie. I was going to say him, but I wasn't sure. I was like, did he?
No, because he plays two characters in the original. He's also a banker or something like that in the original, which I guess he had a hard time selling that to Walt Disney, but he did it. He plays like the same old banker guy in the second one too, which I was like, dang, this guy, he's getting up there and he can move. He's got the moves for sure. Good for him.
Yeah. But at least Mrs. Travers made bank overall.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
how much did she make? A multimillionaire.
Yeah.
Well, she got $100,000 up front for the movie and then 5% of the earnings. Yes.
But she, like, became a millionaire, right?
Yes. Yep. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and then I saw that she was, like, trying to write a sequel to the Mary Poppins, I guess, movie or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, how does that work?
I don't know.
Like, this time with no penguins.
You know what I wanted to look into is that she was so upset about this movie, right? That she was like, no way. Like, I don't want to go through this again. Like, I thought the reason why they didn't come up with the sequel was because she, like, didn't allow it or something. Like, she wouldn't sign. I don't know. I guess, like, I thought there was something.
I mean, maybe she only assigned the movie rights for them to cover the character one time. Because I don't know, she said she would never sell or do another thing with Disney. But then that's why I thought it was funny.
And she also hated the Sherman Brothers.
Yeah, but that's when they asked about, she was trying to write a second movie or whatever.
Well, because I saw that she even left it in her will, like, something like nothing can.
Oh,
like,
damn.
No more or something. So I just didn't understand how they got away with making the movie with Emily Blunt.
Oh,
okay. Then... Here, I found something. If anybody cares.
This is all, like,
so, yeah. Yeah. So from this book forum that I just found, this person says, her last will and testament didn't explicitly forbid Disney from making a sequel, nor did she have the legal grounds to do so. Her original license rights with Disney from the 1960s would have certainly included the right for them to make additional films based on her books, all of which they optioned. No one else was going to make a film, and her goal seems to have been to make a film rather than to block it outright. So let's see. Yeah,
you know,
so
what I was thinking?
Oh, sorry.
I was wondering, because if they're talking about the original agreement that they signed, then probably in that original agreement continues to say that she wants to be in the script writing process. So they probably just avoided making a sequel because they didn't want to work with her again.
Maybe
in the script room, you know. And then probably what happened after that, because I think in the 90s is when there's a lot of, like, management change. I was kind of reading, because I think that there was a lot of different CEOs. Mm-hmm. There wasn't that many, but I just know that, what's his name? Like Michael or something. I don't remember. I try to like really dive deep into it, but I know that now there's new mm-hmm. CEO. So maybe that's why they were like, let's go back into this.
Sorry. I was still reading this. So T.L. Driver has published 6 children's books featuring Mary Poppins between 1934 and 1982. In 1960, she and family company entered into an agreement with Walt Disney Productions under which they agreed to grant Walt Disney Productions an assignment of the right to make motion picture adaptations of any Mary Poppins books, subject to conditions as to approval of their content and the sole and exclusive motion picture rights to the books. And so then I guess a quick look at her will shows that she was anticipating that her books would eventually be made into sequel films and made a provision for how the proceeds would be distributed. So she says in her will, any payments received by my trustees in respect of or any future commercial productions or exploitation in any form whatsoever of any books I have written, including any sequel to the film Mary Poppins, shall be held by my trustees upon trust to distribute in the following manner, etc. So I guess she didn't exactly forbid more movies. I guess she was just adamant that any stage show should be an accurate retelling of her books rather than what Disney had already did. So I guess she was kind of like, been there, done that, can't stop it now. But if you're going to go in any other creative direction with it, like the stage show that they talked about, then that she wanted that to be more accurate and not like Julie Andrews. So that's how they got away with it, I guess.
Yeah, because we did say that Emily Blunt seemed to have a mix of Julie Andrews and the book version of Mary Poppins. So
for sure.
So what were you guys' favorite scenes from the movie? Or a favorite scene? I don't know if I have any, honestly.
I was thinking that too. I was like, oh, I wrote that and I don't even know if I have one. I mean, all I could think of was, I did think it was cute when she like gave the driver a list of names of artists who,
that's true.
And she mentioned like Frida. I was like, Frida, I love her.
True. I did like the scene when he told her about his daughter, when she was like creating that little leaf house or whatever she was doing. Like, I guess any moment where she seemed not like a
villain.
Yeah, where they made her like seem like, oh my god, she has a little softness to her. Those were okay.
I also enjoyed at the very, very end where they actually showed the recording of
some of the recordings.
Yeah, yeah.
How she actually sounded, which I was like, I like that they included that, because you kind of are left wondering, the reason did why we do really this happen? Podcast. Yeah. Was she really actually like that? And the fact that they like played her voice at the end, I'm just like, this girl, she's a chill out.
Yeah.
But my favorite part was when they went to Disneyland.
And they just drove right up. And I'm like,
yeah, because I mean, as a big Disney person, I was like, really, I was like eagle-eyed, like looking to see if there was any like any mess ups with what existed and what didn't exist. And I thought it was really funny and definitely a creative cut and angle of the camera that they very much would frame when they pulled up in front of Disneyland. Because you used to be able to drive right past Disneyland. Like that used to be a parking lot and a street, like before it was the Esplanade and California Adventure. Yeah. It used to be a parking lot. So he very much could like just drive up there. So I thought it was very interesting how they framed that shot where they wouldn't show much higher than the ticket booths right there because they didn't want you to see California Adventure. Which I thought was funny. And then technically kind of a mess up, which I mean, they very much had the focus so that you couldn't read what the marquee said, but you could still see that Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln was there, which technically was not there yet that year because he made Great Moments for Mr. Lincoln for the World's Fair, and they hadn't yet brought it to Disneyland that year. That actually was in Disneyland in 1965. So
well, Miss Disney historian over here.
I was like looking hard because I was just like, and I had to, like, I was like double checking that the Matterhorn was there. I wanted them to mess up so bad.
So, oh yeah, I didn't know that though. That's interesting about the whole, because I thought it was cool. I was like, oh my god, they just drove the car up there or whatever, but I guess they could have back then. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, that really messed with my head.
Wait, okay, like, so what was the whole deal with him looking up at, like, there was a scene where he was like looking up at a window at Disneyland, and then she like kind of also like looked over like, what is he looking at? And then they just kind of continued. He like looked at a window or a room or something.
Was that his office?
I don't know because he like it, but it looked like it was might have been, I don't know, it looked like there was something more to it than just like an office, because I don't know, like he was kind of like pointing things up, and then I think he like kind of like looked up or whatever, and then it showed what he was looking at, and then he's like, okay, well, let's go. And then she kind of like turned around to see what he was looking at.
I'll have to go back and look. I don't think I noticed that, but I mean, all of the windows, well, yeah, most of the windows on Main Street are dedicated to specific people mm-hmm. that worked within the Disney company and stuff. So I don't know, unless he was looking at his apartment over the firehouse. I don't know. I'd have to watch it again.
I don't know. Cause I remember, cause they didn't really, I guess they didn't really say, at least I don't remember them saying. Because there are times where I stop paying attention to the movies that we watch. Like, totally. There are moments where I'm like, okay, let me look what's on my phone. So I'm like, I don't know if I just missed it where he did explain what he was looking at. But I
mean, he could have just been appreciating his park.
I don't know. It just seemed like too much of a pause in the movie to like, I don't know. I feel like it was like hinting at something, but I was like, I'm not in on it. Got to explain it to me because I don't know what you're looking at.
I'll watch it again and I'll let you know.
Okay, thank you.
It blows my mind that he had an apartment there. I'm like, I can't imagine. Staying there.
I've been in it. It's cool.
Yeah. Oh, really? You actually stay in it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought that's why.
Yeah, the whole family there. Would.
Damn.
Yep.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Internet Historians. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and give us a rating. We would also love to connect with you, so give us a follow on Instagram and make sure you subscribe to us on YouTube if you like really want to see our faces when we talk. Next week, we'll be discussing the life of Howard Hughes from the movie The Aviator. So don't forget to tune in. Thanks again, and we will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.